On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
You'd be forgiven for getting a certain amount of deja vu looking at things going on across the water. I see one headline today in the British edition of the Sunday Times talking about how the world-beating COVID app developed by the NHS, downloaded by 19 million people, has managed to fail to send alerts telling people to self-isolate because the app was set at the wrong sensitivity. For a month, the Department of Health over there failed to use software designed to make the app work properly, and so the users whose risk score should have triggered an alert weren't contacted. You'll also see in some of Britain's papers this morning discussion around whether you can still go to the gym and whether it's fair that gyms will be closed given the effect that they have on the mental health of those who attend them. And of course, there's also the whole row around the leaking of advice from the independent scientific advisors who suggested there should be a lockdown before politicians were actually prepared to announce it, which all sounds a little bit familiar, I think, to some Irish listeners. Let's check in with George Parker, who's the political editor of the Financial Times. He's in London for us this afternoon. George, good afternoon. Good to talk to you again. We've already had an announcement then that we're going to have a lockdown kicking in the middle of this week for all of England. Suggestions that it will last until the end of November, but already today some doubts from some senior ministers around whether the end of November will in fact be the end of this new lockdown.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is supposed to be a time-limited 4-week lockdown. As you say, it starts at midnight on Wednesday night, and it's tends to run actually till the 2nd of December, so 4 weeks. And at the end of which, Boris Johnson hopes that we'll be able to go back to the regional tiered system that he's been trying to make work for the last few weeks over here. But as you say, Michael Gove, one of his sidekicks, was saying this was more of a review date, December the 2nd, than necessarily a guarantee that we'd be out of this much more severe form of lockdown on December the 2nd. I think a lot of people are quite sceptical, to be quite honest, about whether there is a clear exit strategy and whether 4 weeks will be enough to actually bring this R number back below one.
To talk about the actual impact of this, because one thing I'm struck by is that we've seen so many different push alerts from British newspapers and news organisations on our phones over here for the last couple of days, talking about different counties that were already going into Tier 3. And we knew that the big row that there was between Number 10 and the Mayor of Manchester, Andy Birmingham, about some of the restrictions that were being imposed there. Is it fair to say that an awful lot, particularly of the north of England, was already in this level of restriction and that this only really changes things materially for those near London?
No, I think this national lockdown is going to go a lot further than the Tier 3 restrictions. You're right, the Tier 3 restrictions did impose quite heavy limits on the ability of bars and restaurants to trade, and you were only able to go outside and so forth. But this new national lockdown will go further. Basically, the onus is on people to work from home. Basically, the message is basically stay at home unless you have to go to work. Restaurants, pubs, bars will close completely unless they're just offering takeaways. Non-essential shops, clothes shops and the like, are going to close down as well, which isn't happening in the Tier 3 places like Manchester and Liverpool at the moment. So the new restrictions do go further than the Tier 3 thing. And crucially, of course, it covers the whole country. And this is something that Boris Johnson said he didn't want to do as recently as last week. He said, you know, it's totally unfair that you would suggest closing restaurants and clothes shops in places like Cornwall or Norfolk, where there are relatively low cases. But in fact, as we now know, the virus is spreading pretty quickly all over the country.
It's kind of fascinating actually to realise that this is a level beyond Tier 3. I know, by the way, there's already been some discussions around this in Wales, but just as a bit of a heads up, there will be rows around children's socks and whether it's appropriate to buy them and whether they're essential. I can give you that warning from the future here now. There's been an awful lot said in UK television in the last couple of hours. First of all, here's Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer talking to Andrew Marr on the BBC this morning.
The next really tough decision anyone's going to have to take is towards the end of this process about whether or not we come out.
Yeah.
I just want to check with you. You have three criteria: infections down, hospital admissions down, R rate below one. And I'm asking you, if those things aren't happening, do we, in your view, should we stay in the lockdown or not?
I think we need to stay in the lockdown until the infection rate's below one. That's what we did last time. I also say that when we come out of the lockdown, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor need to be far less cavalier. It needs to be a much more controlled exit. But I don't know that it's possible to get the R rate below one if your test, trace and isolate isn't working. So that has just got to be fixed.
Jeremy Farrar has just told us, as have other scientists, that this has to be a UK-wide lockdown to be as effective as possible. And I wonder what your message is to your colleagues in Wales and indeed in Scotland and Northern Ireland. Should this not be a UK-wide lockdown?
Ideally, yes. And I've said for months that it ought to be a four nations approach. I know Mark Drakeford is frustrated at the lack of communication between him and the Prime Minister. It should be a four nation approach if that's possible. It's for the Prime Minister to lead on that and get people round the table to do the same thing at the same time.
You're the Labour Party and you've just said yes to my question. Will you therefore ask Mark Drakeford to extend the Welsh lockdown?
What Mark Drakeford wants is better communication with the Prime Minister to agree a way forward, and I'm sure he'd be up for that if the Prime Minister phoned him this afternoon.
Interesting to hear Keir Starmer talking about the need for a four nations approach. That obviously would be quite significant here on this island because we've got 26 counties on our side of the border which are under total lockdown now, but the six counties in Northern Ireland are not. Here is a little bit of Michael Gove, meanwhile, who was talking to Sophie Ridge on Sky News today.
What you seem to be saying is if you're hoping, of course, the data will show the infections are going down, that the R is going down, but if the data on the whole is not looking as you are hoping, then the national lockdown could be extended.
We will always take a decision in the national interest based on evidence. The best information we have...
Is that yes?
Yes.
It could be extended?
Yes.
National?
Well, we want to be in a position where we can, and I believe that this is likely to be the case, have an approach where, if we bring down the rate of infection sufficiently, we can reduce measures nationally and also reduce measures regionally.
So Michael Gove talking about the extension of the possible four-week lockdown with Sophie Ridge earlier on. He was also asked a little bit about the government leak, and we'll come back to that in just a minute because there are some parallels between how Ireland dealt with the early leak of that information or that recommendation from the scientists and how the politicians dealt with it. But first of all, Keir Starmer talking about the need to potentially extend this beyond 4 weeks as well, George. The idea, I think it probably strikes a lot of people in Ireland as being a little unusual, but that doesn't the House of Commons actually have to approve any lockdown? So does that mean that MPs would have a vote about whether to relax these restrictions or whether to extend them at the end of the month, or what happens there?
Well, basically, Boris Johnson was facing a lot of unease amongst Conservative MPs, a lot of whom thought that the restrictions that were in place before had already gone too far and they weren't working properly. So Boris Johnson made the concession that the House of Commons would vote on any big changes to the regulations. So there will be a vote on Wednesday in the House of Commons about whether to introduce this national lockdown. And whether there has to be another vote to come out of it, I'm not entirely sure. I think that would have to be tested in the House of Commons. But certainly if there were big changes, the House of Commons would have to be consulted. And there's a lot of Conservative unease about this new national lockdown, but we can be certain that on Wednesday MPs will vote to enact it because, as you were just hearing there from Keir Starmer, the Labour Party is fully behind the policy, if not the way it's been implemented.
So then bring us then to the leak inquiry, because this relates to how the news about the prospect of a national lockdown first emerged in some of the Saturday papers, their first editions on Friday night, discovering again and people finding out, not through politicians but rather through media reporting, that they were going to be facing into another lockdown. These leak inquiries, they never seem to go anywhere really, do they?
No, not usually, no. There was one recently which ended up with the sacking of Gavin Williams.
That's right, yes.
Defence Secretary, who leaked some, or was alleged to have leaked some stuff from a National Security Council. You're right, they don't normally find the leaker. And there's been a bit of suspicion that when there were, I think there were four ministers in the meeting where this was discussed on Friday afternoon, the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, and Michael Gove, who you just heard the clip of there. And Michael Gove was actually asked directly by Andrew Marr on the BBC this morning whether he was the person who leaked the information. Michael Gove said, of course,
hear a little bit of that. Let's hear it coming from the horse's mouth. Michael Gove denying that to Andrew Marr this morning.
This all started with a meeting in which there were four people present, yourself, Matt Hancock, the Chancellor and the Prime Minister. Somebody leaked from that meeting. Was it you?
No.
Do you know who it was?
No.
Are we going to find out who it was?
Well, no. the Prime Minister has put in place an inquiry. Which the cabinet secretary is overseeing. There are a number of...
A senior cabinet minister leaked something which has caused absolute mayhem for 24 hours.
No. Again, we don't know how that information found itself in the hands of others. All I would say is that there are many meetings that governments have and that ministers have. In those meetings, I think it is important that ministers can speak candidly, that advisers can speak fearlessly. I think it is vitally important that we do that, and that is at the heart of confidence in government. So I regret the fact that this information was shared.
If it turns out that one of your colleagues did leak this information to the newspapers, should they be sacked for it?
Well, as I said on an earlier television programme, it's for the Prime Minister and the Cabinet Secretary to decide what the appropriate steps are.
I'm nearly amazed that Michael Gove didn't insist that it was a really good policy and it didn't matter how it was communicated, because ultimately lockdown is a really good idea. That seems to be the policy here this morning. Irrespective of how the information got out, I mean, does it pose bigger questions for how functional Boris Johnson's government is? Because we probably thought after the election 11 months ago that this was a majority, this was a cabinet that was firmly behind the Premier, that there shouldn't be any real internal schisms, that it was Labour that had the internal rows, not the Tories. You would have thought that things would be a little bit more functional. You wouldn't think that a group as tightly knit as four senior ministers could potentially be so leaky.
You wouldn't, but it's been a pretty disorganised and slightly shambolic government, and there has been plenty of leaking from inside the cabinet. And, you know, people often say that the tone is set from the very top, and, you know, Boris Johnson doesn't exude sort of self-discipline, I suppose. And I guess that seeped through into the wider cabinet. And, you know, all the way, really, ever since Boris Johnson became Prime Minister, the cabinet's become a fairly leaky place. You heard Michael Gove there denying firmly he was one of the leakers. You know, it's worth pointing out that Michael Gove used to be a journalist for the Times before he became a politician. It was one of the reasons why people have been pointing the finger at him, but he denies firmly that it was him. But look, I mean, Boris Johnson's premiership is much weaker than you would ever have imagined, you know, 10 or 11 months ago when he was re-elected as Prime Minister with an 80-seat majority. There's been a series of missteps, most notably around the handling of coronavirus, but the Brexit thing's still rumbling on. And you're starting to see sort of suggestions that people are manoeuvring for the succession. Michael Gove is one of those people who's suspected by some people in Number 10 as being on manoeuvres. Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, of course, is seen as the favourite to succeed Boris Johnson at some point. It was quite noticeable that he was lying very low yesterday. He put out a tweet saying it was the Prime Minister's announcement that the country would go into a national lockdown.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that he wasn't acknowledging any role that his, you know, eat out to help out scheme might have had in actually contributing to a second wave of the virus, because I know that's an argument that a lot of people have made. Gerard is on Twitter, by the way, saying that everything that he's ever learned from leak inquiries came from Yes Minister, which probably doesn't speak too highly as to how successful that will be. I mentioned very briefly there in passing that the internal rows that Labour has, we've seen that again come to the fore this week. Keir Starmer had done a reasonably good job of trying to portray the schisms under Corbyn as being yesterday's news. Will the affairs of the last week and the suspension of Jeremy Corbyn undo some of that progress?
I think so, a bit. I mean, you know, you're referring obviously to the report by the Equality and Human Rights Commission into anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And it can produce a really damning report about the way that anti-Semitism had been allowed to flourish inside the Labour Party while Jeremy Corbyn was the leader. And I think Keir Starmer's plan was basically just to say that we accept this report in full. It's a shameful day for the Labour Party. We'll implement the report in full. This will never happen again under my leadership. And I think he would have been quite happy to draw the line at that. The problem was then that Jeremy Corbyn basically came out and said, yes, it was all terrible. But basically, to paraphrase, he said it wasn't quite as bad as people said. And the moment he said that, and he'd been specifically asked by Keir Starmer not to try to minimise the scale of the problem, that he was suspended from the party. So it's ended up with, you know, with the left of the Labour Party turning on Keir Starmer. I think Keir Starmer would have been quite happy just to turn the page and said, look, this is all in the past. And the problem is that the suspension of Jeremy Corbyn has reignited passions in the party. But nevertheless, Keir Starmer is in a pretty solid position in the party. He's consolidated his position. He's basically purged the Corbynite left from the shadow cabinet. But there is still a fairly sizable chunk of the party which is unhappy with the direction he's taking.
OK, we'll see exactly how that manifests in the weeks and months to come. For now, George Parker, thanks very much for joining us. George Parker, the political editor of the Financial Times, joining us from London. George also quite politely didn't mention England winning the Six Nations.